our first move was sitting in a leadership team meeting, and the lead guy asked, you know, hey, what do you think we need to do? And I said, honestly, I think we need to ask the ladies to step out, and I think we need to ask the men to step up. And he was in a staff meeting. I think that's what needs to happen. I think the ladies need to step out, the men need to step up. I just think that's scriptural. Otherwise, I think we're going to be chasing a lot of good intentions.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ. Welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey, welcome back, guys. My name is Mike Hatch. I am your host, and I will be joined shortly by my co-host, best-selling author Chris Bollinger. Today, we are speaking with Pastor Jared Ellis. And Jared is the preaching minister at Fellowship Regional Church in Iola, Kansas, with a satellite campus in Caney, Kansas. He is also the host of a long-form interview podcast show called The Homilist, which explores the various aspects of preaching. And man, I would highly recommend you check that out if you get a chance. So today, though, we talked to Jared specifically about how he has intentionally designed his church to be for men. Jared grew up, and we talk about this, Jared grew up in a church where he had a great example of men in the church who influenced him. And then in his call to ministry, he kind of reluctantly, if you will, submitted to that call until God spoke to him in a unique way, which you'll hear about, where really he was able to find his niche in ministry, which kind of catapulted him forward into the pastorate. And then he starts sharing the story of how he converted his church to be a more man-centered church. So really interesting conversation. Jared is probably one of the biggest personalities I think I have ever interviewed, and I just have a blast hanging out with him. I think you guys will enjoy him as well. Now, before we jump in, I just wanted to add a quick update about our show. If you will notice, we will be posting half the length in terms of time of each episode as we normally do. So instead of about an hour or so episodes, we're actually going to be posting somewhere around 30-minute episodes. And honestly, it's just because of some feedback we've gotten from you, some of the stats that we've seen online, where most of you drop off in terms of listening to our episodes at around the 20 or 30 minute mark. So we're taking our cue from you guys. It sounds like that is probably the best thing for you, our listeners. Please give us feedback if you disagree, or if you want, or if you agree, or if you want something different. Please let us know. We're trying to do our best to create content that will be valuable to you. So we really value your feedback. And you can email me at mhatch@clchq.org. I'd love to hear from you and learn more about you and find out how we can better serve you. So I wanted to let you know that first before we jump into the interview. But then secondly, please remember that this is a listener-supported podcast, which means the only thing that keeps us on the air is the support we receive from you for CLC, which helps to provide this podcast, really. It makes it available to you. So if you'd like to join us and partner with us in advocating for men's discipleship all over the world, you can go to clchq.org, click on the blue donate button, you'll get a pop-up box, and just make sure that you, in the drop-down menu, that you pick National Fund, and then in the comments, mention the Empowered Manhood Podcast. That way we know that that is how you found out about CLC and are wanting to support. So we would really, really appreciate that. So thank you so much for listening. We know you guys could be spending, you know, your time doing a lot of different things, but you've chosen to invest that most valuable resource you have, your time, into this podcast. So without further ado, let's jump in now to our interview with Jared Ellis. Jared Ellis, welcome, man, to the Empowered Manhood Podcast.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's good to see you. Chris, good to meet you. I'm glad to be part of it.
Yeah. Well, we're grateful to have you, man. You and I we met, has it been a couple months ago? 3 months ago? I don't know. How long?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a bit. Yeah.
I feel like we hit it off right away. I love your spirit. I love your approach as a pastor to your church. And we're going to get into some of that. You also obviously just, well, not obviously, but you just started a CLC group. So that's right. Exciting as well. And I think when our listeners hear a little bit more about your church, they'll see how beautiful that fit could be between CLC and your church.
Yeah.
Very unique. Very right. unique. But before we jump into all that, I want to start out first by giving you a chance to share your fence post story with us so guys have a little bit more background on who you are.
Excellent. Well, again, thanks for having me. This is I've seen some of your other guests, and these are some pretty high impact, important people. So this might be a pretty disappointing episode for some folks.
No, that's the reason everybody says that.
Jared who? Like Jared, what's he do? Like, okay, it's a skip.
Dude, skip, no. Oh my skip. Gosh. You wait, folks. You're going to love this. Anyway, go ahead, Jared.
All right. So I was raised in a Christian home, and good parents. We were in church, I mean, every Sunday morning, Sunday evening, you know, Wednesday. I mean, we were just went to a Christian school all the way up to like the sixth grade. Mm. So my childhood was pretty insulated as far as the people around me that were good. The church I grew up in was an incredible church. Just to give you an idea. Let's see. And we watched it grow through the years. But the town that we grew up in was about 250 people. Mm. By the time we were in high school, by the time we had graduated, this church was running, you know, 800 to 1,000 every Sunday in a town of 250 people.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's a, there were some things about that church that really, really affected my life personally, but also the way we do ministry where we are in our church now. I currently work with a childhood friend who grew up in the same church as me. His dad was the pastor at the church, and we grew up together. I mean, he's a year older than me in school. And so like our childhoods have been exactly the same. We went to Sunday school together. We went to grade school together, high school together. We went to two different colleges together. We worked at two different churches together. We've actually gone to job interviews together and interviewed as a pair.
Wow.
You know,
that is unique.
And listen, and managed to sell ourselves as a team that they needed.
That's amazing.
And I mean, it was just like, and so when I say it's affected the way we do ministry, he was there. His name's Luke Bycroft. He was a part of that. I mean, all the way from, you know, grade school all the way up. I mean, he and I would play in the sanctuary during the summer. His dad would come into the office. He would come with him. I lived across the street. We would play in the church. We'd play tag. We did a bunch of stuff inside the church we probably shouldn't have been doing, but we had a ball all summer playing in the church. So along with that, like when you see a church like that, 250 people in the town, but the church just continues to grow like all the time. I mean, up to, you know, 800, 1,000 people a Sunday, there has to be something in the fabric of it, you know, for that to have that kind of momentum, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's a 250 person town on the suburb of a big city. It's like,
yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the closest reasonably sized community?
So the next biggest place would be, and closest place would be a place called Caney, Kansas, which you're talking, you know, I don't know, 2,500, 3,000 people.
Okay. Okay.
You know, so, and it's got tons of churches there.
Right.
I mean, you've got Independence, which is right down the road, which is not a very big place. Coffeyville, Kansas, not a very big place. So you're talking from there, Tulsa is probably the biggest city. I mean, it's a very rural place.
Right.
And one of the key features of that place was there were men, and it was packed full of men. And what was really cool, and I just remember this so vivid, that when you went to church at Tyro, and if you came through the front doors, which we never did, you went through the back side of like the gym and all this. That's where the kitchen was. That's where the coffee was. And if that's where the coffee was, that's where the men were. And so when you would go in this door, all the men were in the kitchen drinking coffee. And so what you had to do is there was a little bit of an initiation thing. Like You walk through and these men would talk to you. Good morning. How are you doing? They grab you and they, you know, rooster tail you in the back of the of the hair. They, hey, what are you doing? They gouge you, you know, tease you. I mean, this. And so there was a little bit of this as you grew up and you had to walk through this
gauntlet, you
know, kind of a gauntlet. That's where that's the word I was looking for. This gauntlet of grown men who say stuff. And like, there's something very affirming about that, because then you have something in front of you that's a goal. You know what we dreamed of doing growing up? Standing in there drinking coffee. That's where the men were, you know, like that's what we wanted to do. Like that was the, this is where the guys were, you know, there was something tough about that, you know, there was something tough about that. So those, a lot of those guys, a lot of those guys impacted me. My dad's a good, strong Christian dude. And I mean, when you're raised with that, it impacts your life. That was a big portion of my, big portion of my faith. Had some time, I wouldn't say necessarily away from the Lord, but desperately trying to avoid the calling that I knew was on top of me. I mean, just like, ugh, like, it, man, I just, that was hard. That was hard for me. It was hard for me to,
what was it like, that hey, was,
I want you to be,
what up. Was it that was pulling you in the opposite direction?
This is, it sounds so, so pompous when I say it, but it's like looking at ministry, it was just like, that is, I don't know. It's not cool.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't look too highly upon it.
I mean, I like what the guy did. There was a lot of those dudes that came through, and what they did was incredible. We had great youth ministers. We had great interns at our church. We had great, I mean, it was just, for me, though, it was like, ugh, that looks like it's, of course, I mean, it's like you mentioned it earlier, you know, as an Enneagram 7. I mean, that's kind of where I land. Man, being locked down in a church with a whole bunch more rules than seemingly every other man in the world, this, there's nothing about this that seems too appealing to me. Right. That looks like a way too many restrictions. Yeah. So I spent some time trying to dodge that. That's a good question though. How did you phrase it, Mike?
Pulling you, said, you away from it, or directing you away from that calling that you mentioned.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what that would have. I mean, it could have been. I mean, it was like a. I mean, I don't know.
Did you want to get out of the area? Was there anything calling you to, you know, make your mark somewhere outside the area?
I wanted to have fun. I wanted to go do something fun. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be, and there was something about that that just didn't look, that didn't look fun. That didn't look like it's, I mean, it's respectable, but I don't know. You know, I need something a little more.
Rebellious.
Trips my trigger a little bit more. Yeah, that was just tough. That was tough. And so I spent some time kind of dodging the Lord on that as best I could. And I still wasn't even sold on it until I'd gone to a couple schools playing football and finally felt like, okay, it's time to go submit to the calling, go do the thing you need to do. And I think it was second semester maybe, and I was taking a preaching class. how weird is that, right? It's like, I'm not buying in. It's like, but I'm still going. Like, I'm telling the Lord, like, I'm not these people. I'm not going to do it. And I just keep marching in that. It's like,
that is so interesting.
Stupid, and I hate this job. And, you know, and you know what changed? I'll tell you what changed for me was I was in a class, and the professor said, I don't know if you've heard of a guy named Garrison Keillor. And it was like, Garrison Keillor? It's like, bro, I mean, I listened to Garrison Keillor my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was, I mean, and there was something so awesome about, like, listening to him on the radio. And I would listen to Garrison Keillor. And so he said this, and I was just like, what are you talking about, Garrison Keillor? What's this guy going on about? Like, you got to be a preacher. And he's like, listen, if you can preach, and you can tell a story, if you can tell a story like Garrison Keillor.
Right.
You know how to preach. And I'm like, hold on a second. Maybe this isn't as weird as I thought it was. You know, maybe this isn't as bad. And he's like, can you tell? So I preached, and I got done doing my little, whatever it was, preaching for the class. And he's just like, dude, you're a storyteller. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you're a storyteller. This guy, this is what you do.
Yeah.
He's like, this is, remember the Garrison kid? I'm like, okay. Like, yeah. Like, all right, Lord. Like, I don't mind. Like, there's something about, like, this will. I thought you meant something different, Lord. Yeah. Like, you know, I was like, I thought maybe the Lord, I didn't know But that was,
dude, and you,
that was kind of
you
the
are a storyteller. Like, that's for sure. Because I remember our first meeting, which ended up going 3 hours. I would say probably 45% of the meeting was you telling stories, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't say that in a negative way.
It's a problem sometimes. It's a problem sometimes. So
our non-Midwest audience may not know who Garrison Keillor is, so Mike, you'll have to post the Prairie Home Companion on the show notes, because I mean, I grew up listening to him, but some people may have never heard of him. So
yeah.
Well, Chris, check this. Masterful, like, storyteller.
Oh, he's incredible. And check this out. This is so wild. He's actually coming to our town where we live.
Wow.
In Iola. He's coming to our town, I believe, in February. And so, so I'm freaked completely out.
Yeah,
so I've tried to get a hold of his team. Like, cause you know, I got the other podcast that I do, the preaching podcast that I put together. And so, like, Garrison Keillor is one of the guys on my hit list of people I want to sit and visit with about preaching. So I'm going to try to nail him down while he's here and have a brief conversation just about the preaching stuff. Oh, I was geeked completely out of my mind. Completely out of my mind. Like, just.
So,
that's so funny.
Yeah, news from Lake Wobegon, where all the men are strong, all the women are beautiful, and all the children are just above average. This guy's freaking incredible storyteller. Incredible. I mean, he's just great delivery, perfect wandering, great dramatic pauses. The guy's a 10. Awesome. I mean, a 10 storyteller. So, yeah, man. So that was a big one. That was a big one for me. So I think that transition was kind of important for me, you know, like moving into that place of, like, the Lord. Like, listen, Jared, I know who you are. I know what you do. I know what you're made for. That was just a big moment, like, to, you know, when you wander into your own reality of, like, you spend all this time running around and then all of a sudden the Lord's like, would you come here? Just look. And then you look and all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're not an idiot. I'm an idiot. Like, this is awesome.
So then, you moved toward ministry then. Kind of moving in the direct in the flow that God had been trying to get you into the whole time,
right?
And now, obviously, you're and feel free to if you need to back up. I'm jumping to your current church, but we don't have to at this point. But you've taken that experience of growing up in your church and being around those men, and you told me, and I remember when you said this, I thought, wow, because we've had David Murrow on. I don't know if you know David Murrow. He wrote the book, Why Men Hate Going to Church, and just recently also wrote Drowning in Screen Time. And so, and Chris has been a good friend of his for a while. And so when you said you have kind of intentionally designed your church for men, that struck me, okay? Obviously, because we're, I mean, it's discipleship ministry. And then what's even crazier about that is how you said the women are coming in droves. It's like, what? That's crazy.
I'm telling you, it was the weirdest thing.
So was that something from the beginning that you intentionally sought out to do, or did you kind of almost trip into it and say, oh, wait, you know what? This is actually a good way. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. When we joined, when Luke and I joined this church, it was kind of a non-denominational, kind of a Southern Baptist type of just middle of the road, you know, reach out and be, you know, like everything to everyone, and we'll start a group, or we'll start a program, or we'll be a whatever. I mean, it just seemed very broad, and one of the things for me is that I'm not one of those guys that's an idea chaser. You know, I like to take an idea and like to grind it down to see, like, how much sustainability does it have? Because I do not want to waste energy. I just do not want to waste energy. I don't want to waste time on something that's not going to pay. And so for me, it's like, when I look around, I'm just like, that's useless. That's useless. There's no way there's people in town who do this, you know, it's
right.
And this is going to sound kind of cold when I say it, but it's like, are we going to do a VBS this year? It's like, you know how many churches in this town are doing a VBS?
Right.
You can go to a VBS all summer long. Like, why do I need that? Why do we need to have one? Like, why is it important that we have it? It's like, are we going to do a Christmas program? It's like, you know how many Christmas programs are being done in this town? You want to go to a Christmas program? Plenty of places to go to a Christmas program. Like, but we're not making hangers hanger halos and strapping them, duct taping them to kids, you know, just because you're going to bring your grandma. Like, it's just, I don't understand it. Like, there's better people who do this and they care about it. You know what I mean? And so for me, it's like, we need to streamline this thing. And so we were on for a few years before the kind of transition happened. And the guy that had started the church left, and Luke and I kind of stepped into that role. And at that point, that's when we were like, we need to streamline this. We need to streamline this, and we need to start angling toward like every single thing that we've ever known and that we've seen. You know, I'll give you a quick illustration. When I went to college at Ozark Christian College, coming out of the church that I came out of, it was really frustrating to get there and see all the guys that were going into ministry, because there were so many of them that just seemed so soft. And I know that sounds very, very judgmental, but they just were. I mean, they just were. And I'm not saying like, you know, I'm the toughest guy on the block, that I'm like, I need to like super machismo and like all my, you know, masculine bravado. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that when I looked around, these guys were not the guys that I went to church with. These were not the men that I knew growing up.
Yeah.
I don't know where they came from. I don't know. And I kept looking around going, I don't understand this. And that this could have been a cultural thing. This could have been a community thing. This could have been, you know, this isolated, but I just kept looking around and going, I'm not seeing what I grew up with. And I tell you what happened. And it was extremely judgmental on my part, because I'm looking from the outside of these guys' lives, and I'm not familiar with them. But anyway, I leave my dorm one morning, and I'm really struggling. I'm like, Lord, this place is just, I'm like, are there any prophets left in Israel? I mean, is there any prophets left? And on my way out of the dorm, I stayed in this place called Boatman Hall. On my way out of the dorm, I bump into this guy, and he's a really ticked off, pencil pushing resident aid guy, like the resident assistant, like one of the dorm mm-hmm. guys, like, and
right.
And he sees me, and he's just like, I want to know who did it. And I was just like, instantly grabbed me. Like, I want to know who did it. And I was just like, I don't even know what they did, but I wish I was a part of it. Like, it sounds like it's furrowed the brows of all the right people. Like, I don't know. That's great. I wish I was in and I'm just like thrilled, because I'm like, somebody did something that has upturned everything. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Of course, he's looking at me like, oh yeah, if anybody had something to do with the pal, it was you. And I was just like, thank you. That's a fine compliment. I appreciate it. But for the first time, I'm not going to have anything to do with me. I don't know what you're talking about. And he says, just look. And he turns and he points over my shoulder, just look. And I looked. And in the night, somebody had crawled out the window, scaled out across the roof, removed the O from Boatman Hall, and scooted the letters over so it said Batman Hall.
Batman Hall.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
Instantly was just like, freaking awesome.
That is so good.
I mean, just like instantly in. And I was like, all right. And the Lord was like, listen, there are still all kinds of prophets that are not bowed the knee to Baal. Like, and I'm like, oh, this is so fantastic. You know? So there was some of that for me, like those moments that were, that when I think back on, like, those were magic moments to me, because here's the deal. When you're a little boy, every stick is a gun sword, you know, every rock is a hand grenade or a bullet, you know, or a dart or whatever, like you're constantly in that mode of like rough and tumble play, like excitable, you know, like adventure, everything is. And that when I looked at ministry, it was like, these are the roots. These are where we come from. This is where we come from. This is what we need to create this environment. We need to create this environment for men. Like, this is what we need to do. And so we had a whole rebrand, and
your church did, you're saying?
The whole church. We just did a whole rebrand, and that kind of took another cool turn. We introduced one of the emblems.
Before you get there, so you're saying that You've always kind of had this rebellious spirit about you, in a sense, or maybe adventurous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe adventurous might be
it. Adventurous. That's adventurous is probably better.
And so, how did that? So, because you said my original question was, how did you decide? Was it intentional, or was it something you kind of fell into to intentionally design your church to be for men?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing me back to that. That's the problem with being a storyteller. You know, it's like, I don't remember what you asked me, but
it's a great story.
I got a great story for you.
It's all good. It's all good.
It all kind of happened in the rebrand. Like, we looked around and it was just that idea of like, we would much rather be two miles thick in a dime in an area than ever be 2 miles wide and a dime thick, you know? Like, let's just go to the deep end of the pool. And so once you kind of start to collect your resources, like, take a look at your resources. What do you have? Like, what do you have? Like, what do you have that's sustainable that you could do the rest of your life? You know? And for me, it's this, like, curiosity and adventure. And I can do this I wake up every single day and this is what I got. I got curiosity and I got adventure. And these are the sustainable things that we have. Like, what can we talk about? What can we be a part of? What can we push the rest of our life? What am I never going to grow tired of in chasing after the Lord? Like, finding those ferocious sides of him. So in the rebrand, it was just this idea of, listen, we got to go to the deep end of the pool. And if that means that, you know, I mean, we got to go through a manhole, like it's something the size of a manhole, like this, that's what we got to do. But we've got to get depth. We've got to get depth. We've got to build better men. Like, we need to be better men. We got to build better men. And if that means we got to lose some stuff, then we got to lose some stuff. Part of the transition, the guy that hired us on, the senior minister, right before he left, he was asking us, you know, what are the things that need to change in order for you guys to take the wheel when I go? And I told him, I said, here's the thing. I think that this idea of a leadership team, husband, wife, leadership team, is just a little too off the scriptural precedent prescription for me. Like, that's just, I mean, I come from a Christian church. I come from a restoration Christian church background. Like, elders were called elders. They were men. There were also deacons in our church. There wasn't a board. It was the elders. The elders made the decisions. The elders led the church. The elders, they were the ones who, like, they're the ones who shepherd the people. Like, this is, and so for me, it was like, I got this group of husband and wife teams, and I could just look at that situation. I mean, for me, and just go, there's 100 things wrong with that. But the first one is, somebody's going to make us do a Christmas program. That's going to be part of it. Like,
right.
That's great.
And here's the problem. Like, the soon as somebody's wife suggests a Christmas program, this guy now has got to tell his wife no. I mean, unless he really wants to do a Christmas program, but I promise you he doesn't. And he's just like, he's got to tell her no in front of people. And then he's got to go home with that. And it's like, how in the world are we ever going to get, like, true, honest leadership out of this? Because we're just going to have people who are just. And so what we saw happen was that very thing. Somebody said, we'd like to do a Christmas program. Of course, all the husbands instantly were just like.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's like, don't Rubbing you think brow. So? Like, yes. Yeah. I mean, instantly. And it was a disaster. People got mad. People got irritated. I mean, the communication was terrible on it. And it was off. I'm not saying there's something wrong with a Christmas program. I mean, that theologically, there's something. I'm just saying, like, you know, churches have split for bigger reasons. I mean, and smaller reasons. Yeah. I mean, there's just some things that are out there that, like, why are we doing it? Like, there's 100 of these anyway. So that's my soapbox. I apologize. So,
all right, Jared, let me ask you a question. So anytime you change the culture of a church and you're intentional about it, it can go one of two ways, right? I mean, there can be a lot of blowback. There can be a lot of hurt feelings. There can be families that are going to go to the church down the street.
For sure.
Or you can have people say, finally, somebody did what we've been wanting to do. So I'm not a process guy, so I don't really want to get into the process of it. You can if you want, but tell us about how it went. You know, what was the reaction, and how did things go the first 6 months, year after you made an intentional effort to change the culture?
Yeah. Our first move was setting in a leadership team meeting, and the lead guy asked, you know, hey, what do you think we need to do? And I said, honestly, I think we need to ask the ladies to step out, and I think we need to ask the men to step up. This is not in a leadership team meeting, it's in a staff meeting. I think that's what needs to happen. I think the ladies need to step out. the men need to step up. I just think that's scriptural. Otherwise, I think we're going to be chasing a lot of good intentions, you know. And what we need is something a little bit different. And that's not a criticism against women. I mean, that's just a criticism of my own personal experience. Like you get in church and there's like people really want to please people. I mean, these ladies want to please people. And what we needed was to we got to pull men out of some of the problems that they're in. That's what we need to. That's the business of the church. That's what we got to do. You know, the other stuff's fine, but you got to do this other stuff. And if we're doing this and it's keeping us busy, not able to get our hands on what we really need to be doing, this is dumb and useless, useless, you know? And so, the very next leadership team meeting, the senior pastor turns and looks at me and he says, hey, so I just want to let everybody know, you know, like I'm on my transition out. And, I have been asking Jared, like, what do we think we need to be doing in the future? And, so Jared would just like to go ahead and make an announcement on what he thinks the next step should be. And
I was wow. No warning.
I mean,
Jared, you have the floor.
It was so awesome. It was so awesome. I mean, I was like, okay, like this is going to be sweet. Like this is going to be, and like Jared, go ahead. And so I just, that's what I said. I said, you know, scripturally, like, here's what I see. I think that the leadership of the church needs to be by the elders of the church. I said, which means I think the ladies need to step out. I think the men need to step up. And there was one lady who went,
yeah.
And then one lady said, well, that is scriptural. And then another lady said, no. Yep, it is. And so the lady that kind of huffed at first, kind of pulled herself back. And the other lady said, you know, I think that's a good idea. And I'll tell you what I think happened. I think there was two parts there. I think one, they wanted to be obedient to scripture. I think two, they were thrilled with the idea of somebody standing there saying, I think it's good for men to step up, you know, like that's a good move. And I'm telling you what, like that huff has been the most pushback that we've got, in the last 11 years.
Wow. Wow.
That's
it. Well, and so you went into the rebranding process then after that at some point. The other pastor ends up transitioning out. You take over. Now I'd love for you to share. I would love for you to share about that symbol that you guys came up with. Because this, dude, when you shared this, it blew my mind. And I cannot wait for folks to hear about this.
We created this crest, this like a family crest. Right. And on it, we've got the word. We've got the scripture. Mm-hmm. We've got the cup and the bread. Mm-hmm. We've got a bow and an arrow, and it's in quartered. It's quartered. Mm-hmm. We've got a bow and an arrow, and then we've got brass knuckles down in the bottom corner.
You heard him right, folks. Brass knuckles. Sorry, I wanted that to be more dramatic. Go ahead. Anyway.
yeah. So I drew it up. I mean, I just drew it up, and I'm not a great artist, but I drew it up, and I just kept looking at it like, I don't think you can do this. I think this is against the rules. Like, I don't know, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you can't. Like, I don't know. And so I took it into my buddy Luke, and I was like, hey, you want to check this out? He just looks at me and see, listen, you know those partnerships where you got a guy who, like, I'm the out on the edge guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the guy that, like, here's what I think. Like, what should we do this? And then somebody's got to be a kite and somebody's got to be an anchor.
Yes.
You know, so I'm not the anchor guy. I'm the kite guy. And so I've got the spool all the way out and I'm brass knuckles and I'm amped up and I'm, you know, like, what do you think of this? And Luke's responsibility at that point is to start reeling it back in. Like,
right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Come on back a little bit, fella. Like maybe we could do like an old school.
Oh, Wait.
Old school knuckle sandwich guy, you know, an old school, you know, mustached.
Right.
Fighter in the corner, like,
kind of art of manliness.
That's what I'm waiting on. Just something like that. Nah, no, Luke just said, love it. Let's do it. And I was like, all right, so now I feel like if he's on my base, I need to go back to the other base. You know, it's kind of like maybe we overran each other.
You got to take it up a level.
or I need to go back. Like, if he's already there, I need to go the other direction. Like, we got two men on second base, and this is not what we need right now. Like, this isn't good. And he's like, no, it's good. It's right. I don't know. And he's like, let's talk to the elders. It's like, okay, great, perfect.
And obviously you explain the meaning behind it, which we'll get to.
You're going to explain that
eventually, but keep going.
Yeah. I can kind of walk you through, like the main ideas. So we take it to the elders and I throw it down. It's just a rough sketch. Like, here's what I think, you know, what do you think? And they all kind of look at it, you know, four or five guys. And it's like, yeah, they pass it around. Is this brass knuckles? yeah, it's just an idea. It's just a, we can take it, leave it. Doesn't.
Yeah, nothing written in stone yet, guys. Love your feedback.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. And they pass it around. And so when do you want to do it? Like, I don't know.
Oh, wow. So they're green lighting it.
We should do it. I don't know. It was no problem. It went into fabrication. It started going on the literature, on everything inside the building. Like, it was like, okay, here it is. Like, this is what we do. Slapping it on. I mean, it's on t-shirts. Okay. And, I was preaching through them. I was preaching through them all, just each one with its own passage of scripture. So I'm preaching through it. And one Sunday, the super classy lady who goes to church with us, she's sitting on the edge, and we were introducing the emblems one by one, each on their own individual banner. And so we'd gone all the way through, and brass knuckles was the last one. It was the last one to go.
Gotta save the best for last.
So now the full crest is up on the front wall. These two big banners with the full crest, brass knuckles are on it now. And so I come walking by, and this lady stops me, just super classy lady, super classy. And she says, excuse me, pastor. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she says, are those brass knuckles? And I said, yes, ma'am, they are. And she goes, okay, looking forward to hearing about it. I just kept waiting on pushback. None ever came. I mean, there's been none. I mean, none.
So, now perfect timing. Explain the meaning behind the brass knuckles.
So the meaning of the brass knuckles, it's this verse, 1 Corinthians. Okay.
Hey guys, we'll hear more about the brass knuckles next week in the second half of our interview with Jared Ellis. And we'll also hear more about how his church specifically prioritizes ministry to men. So until next time, keep living empowered